Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Close again, aren't we?
Oh, no, and I feel as though like I'm on BT or something, you know, like side at pitch.
Murray Walker.
Hold it microphone. I'm just waiting for Roy Keane to come past. Fuck off, Keane. All good, you?
Yes, good. We're in Leeds.
We're in Leeds.
For our first live show.
Almost. Hell of a venue, isn't it?
It's lovely, yeah. Isn't it?
Can you pan out, Matty?
Royal Box up there.
Do you think people have paid extra for there?
Oh, that's top dollar price, that.
Do you think so? Oh, I wonder if they... It's like Michael McIntyre, isn't it? When they take the phone off them.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Should we do that tonight?
It's not a bad shout, that. Yeah, we'll get somebody out of the car and just message Mrs. saying, just letting know that I'm stopping out tonight and see what comes back.
Yeah.
First proper one back, innit? Leeds.
Yeah.
I think we've got a full house.
Friday night in Leeds.
What do you want? What we learnt from the last live shows, we'll spread them out a little bit because they're quite tiring. So we've got one Friday, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday. We just kill ourselves, don't we? What about that prick, by the way, Richarlison?
I like him, me.
Eh?
I like it.
You've changed your tune.
I know. I like him now. Like, because I heard Agbonlahor saying, "Oh, he'd kick him," which is fair enough. Yeah, kick him. But somebody else was saying he should be punished. He should be punished.
Not punishment, but I think to be fair, the worst thing about it is the lad who's done him, he must be thought, I wish I'd have got him better.
Yeah.
Do you know, like you think, I want a dead leg him here, so he's out for 2 weeks.
One of the lads who did the bike ride has set up a GoFundMe to pay the fine for the lad's yellow card.
Yeah, which is it?
I'm not sure what they get fined, but he's asking for a quid off all the Forest fans. Nice little learner for him, like.
He's gonna pay the. I think it's about £12, isn't it?
Is it
£12 for the yellow card? He's gonna make fucking 40 bags.
I like it though. It makes it interesting.
Do you know what?
A few characters on the field.
I wouldn't mind it, Chris. Right, but he came on sub, didn't really contribute to the game.
He did. He did kick ups and then got exactly. Put on his ass.
You know, if Henri did it in his pomp.
Yeah.
When he was just taking the piss out of
everybody. You need a bit more about yourself, like,
at least
start
the game.
Yeah. If you've scored a couple, maybe. But come on, mate.
Coming on for a cameo and then
taking the piss.
That shit.
Is there what else happening?
How's your toenail?
It's all right, I hurt my toe. Oh, funny. I had an interaction with a fan of the show.
Right.
I went to Bolton Food and Drink Festival on Saturday night. You've been to one before, haven't you? But loads of food stalls, a few bands on, and my mate with her, who always takes piss about the podcast, like, he says it's shit.
Yeah?
He just says, oh, the Neanderthals talking about shitting in shoes. So he might have a point, actually. But he listens and he likes it, really, but he just likes to, you know,
what's his name?
A bit. I'm not, I won't give his name.
What's his name?
Don't John. Give him the attention.
John, you yeah. Fucking tit.
So he were giving it a bit whilst we were there having a few drinks. Anyway, about half nine, ready for home. We're walking back, getting a taxi, and with kids as well. Like, we've all been with kids and stuff. There's one food stand still open, and one of the girls decides to get some to eat on the way back. So I'm stood there waiting, and I'm watching something unfold at the food stand. There's two lads and a girl arguing. Like, one of them's pushed in front of the other or something. So I stand back and get the kids because I can see this is bubbling. Like, this is, and the two lads walk off, and she's not finished. She goes back for more. Shouting in his face. Next minute, she slaps his chips out of his hand.
Oh, no.
Mayo, chips, ketchup all over.
Slap me right face, but not my chips. Leave me jockeys
out. His chips have scattered everywhere. he shoves this woman. Not hard, but he's just pushed her back. And I thought, oh, flipping heck. So I've got the kids around me thinking, this isn't good. This woman's boyfriend's seen what's going on. You should have seen him coming down runway. When he's seen what's going on, he's going tense at dozen. And the way that he was approaching, I thought he was going to come out with some Chuck Norris shit. Like, he's coming at pace, and he's intent on damage. But he went down like Chuck Berry. He were on floor in about 2 minutes.
What, he got filled in?
He got a slug to the nose. He's coming in with a crane kick, and he got slugged to the nose and down on deck.
What you're saying is he's coming too fast, and he's left himself open.
Yeah, he come in like a crane. Like, and he ended up on floor. But like I said, I've stood back with kids. Well, you know, you don't want to get involved with anything like that, do you? But my mate, who I mentioned, John, he's gone over. Separation. You know, well, go on your way. Separated up. Pulls this lad over, bloody nose and everything. He's just saved his life, maybe. He's saved him a good hiding anyway. Pulls him over. He's come up, nose is bleeding. He looks up, he goes, Chrissy, how are we doing? He says, can I have a photograph? And gives me mate the phone. Gives him the ball. He just saved him a kicking. Next minute, he's standing back like David Bailey.
Taking a photo, you and this bloodied fan. Yeah. Did he wipe the nose?
He wiped the nose. But the timing was perfection. The timing was pure perfection.
What? Your life, it's just like, there's always something going off, isn't there?
So did that just diffuse the situation then?
Oh yeah, it diffused the situation. So you, well, them two are gone. They're gone. My mate had
done the work.
Job separating it. He'd done a good job, you know, diffusing the situation, saved this lad's life, and then he got photograph duties.
I want to see this picture.
The big, so yeah,
he's
so
obviously listening.
Yeah, if you could
upload it.
But the one thing I'm concerned about, did he get another bag of chips?
No, but they went. No chips.
No chips. They've got no money at all.
Were they loaded?
They were tornado chips. Have you seen them?
With a bit of spice?
Yeah, they were one potato, and then they peel them in a whirl and then fry them. So it's like chips on a stick.
Oh.
Yeah.
See, I'm...
scattered everywhere.
Nice all off over, the floor, then.
All over cobbles.
Yeah, I think I might go in and just try one for pallet. Just see if you wanted a portion.
We tried that on the pallet, by the way. The Keltoy.
Oh, I tell you what, we've got a message from... This episode is coming right at you from Beer 52.
The lads are back, aren't they?
Yeah.
The lads are back.
We've got a box in.
The box of goods.
Oh. Now, if you don't know what Beer 52 is, they are the number one beer company for your delivery beers.
In the world, by the way.
In the world.
In my opinion.
In the world.
And I value your opinion, Chris.
And as part of the show, you can get a free case. We're talking free case.
Just lift a few up.
Get them out, Chrissy.
We've got a bull roarer. Roar, a bull roarer. Try it. Get that in your gills, John.
Ooh, American Pale Ale.
So, and you can get a free box. Because you watch, because you listen.
So that
all
box,
you got to do
that
is
box f- is free. All you need to do is pay your postage and packaging. £5.95, is it?
It is £5.95. Pay the £5.95, and one of these will be landing on your doorstep.
Chuck us that thing of nuts.
Couple of snacks. They are, John. Baked pretzels.
Oh, they are right up my street. The old baked pretzels.
And what I do like, if you don't like the darker ales, you can choose the lighter option.
Oh, because I'm not that keen on the darker ones.
I think some of the darker ones are in acquired taste. Yeah, you've got to be a seasoned heavy boozer.
Yeah, it's so nice to have like the option, though, isn't it?
You like me and you don't like them, then you can just get the lighter ones. That's good.
So what is that, £5.95?
£5.95, you get the box on your doorstep. And this month, like we said, from across the world, it's Ireland.
Oh,
some of the finest beers from the Emerald Isle. Oh, I'm looking forward to digging in. So, yeah, all you got to do is pay the £5.95 by visiting www.beer52.com/kosh. And you'll get them 10 free beers on your doorstep for £5.95 postage. You can cancel at any time as well.
Yeah, if you cancel it, if it's not for you or with the eating going up, you can cancel at any time. Yeah. No
obligation.
So that's www.beer52.com/kosh.
Chuck, there's another one here, bigger.
You want another?
Aye.
There you go.
Well, that's a free
by
deal
the way,
on that one.
Can we speak about Don?
What
that is top. I was right, wasn't I? Top tier.
Yeah.
You agree?
Yeah, I've not listened to it, but yeah. I can remember it.
He's
being good,
really wasn't he? I just wish we'd have got more out of his impressions.
I know, yeah.
Because you could tell he had some in the bank. And the other thing is, when we finished as well, he was telling us some stories about his prank calls and stuff, which we should have got in the episode.
The thing is, it was dodgy territory, weren't it? Because he said he's got a Mick McCarthy impersonation. If he does it and it's not great, we've got to then put a fake laugh on, haven't we?
Yeah. We don't do that often, do we?
No.
We like to keep it real.
Exactly.
That's why we're... But it was top notch, wasn't it?
Yeah. great guy.
The thing is, since it's been released, fans are still coming on from loads of different clubs saying, did you ask him why he hates so-and-so?
Yeah, there's been a few more mentions since, haven't there?
He hates the full championship.
He hates everybody. He hates everybody, which is surprising for such a lovely man.
It's just, I wouldn't say you're a hater.
No.
He's just saying that how it is, isn't he, Chris? You know that.
Keeping it real, like us.
That's all you've got to do.
Who have we got this week?
Malcolm Christie this week.
Oh.
This is a good episode. This is it's a two-parter.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. And it needs to be. It's a really good story. And a story that a lot of people won't be aware of. Like, I mean, myself, like, well, what happened to Malcolm Christie?
Because he was one of them, wasn't he, where... Just kind
big,
of
what he was like.
He was one of the next big things, wasn't he? And he come from non-league, and which we'll get into. But
the second half was very sad, wasn't it?
Emotional.
What can happen? Yeah,
emotional.
You can see he was emotional talking about it.
Yeah, we're like Malcolm tell his tale.
Yeah, should we get him in?
Yeah, come he's on then, Malcolm. Oh, we've got two more live shows after this as well, so you could be at the next two.
It was at Bradford. Bradford Wednesday the 7th.
Middlesbrough
Sunday the 11th.
Yeah.
See you there. See you there.
I think he did.
I know. I was looking at that. Whether it was Jeff.
Been trying to find it on Google.
You know, who was a ref at Old Trafford?
Wasn't at Old Trafford.
Which one?
It was the 2-2.
The 2-2 was Steve Dunn.
Right. Just looked like Jeff Winter.
No,
we've had him on.
Yeah, Jeff Winter. Yeah, he gave a penalty away at Old Trafford against me and Gary Neville.
You brought him down or he brought you down?
Yeah, I didn't bring him down. Honestly, it was so clever what Neville did. So the ball went over me and Neville. Neville hooked my arm. Like that. So he hooked my arm and fucking fell over. And obviously I went with him and it looked like I barged him over. And we both went down and fucking Jeff Winter penalty. I went, you what? And like I looked at Neville, he fucking gave me a little wink. I thought, you fucking bastard. Absolutely done me a treat. Done me a fucking kipper. Like honestly, just... But the thing is, the resulting penalty, Scholes took it and Poom ended up saving it. So I was like, I remember thinking, redemption.
You wouldn't have been playing when he scored down there, would you? He scored for Sunderland against.
I remember him scoring for
one of the best headers I've ever
absolute
seen.
Rose like a salmon, didn't he?
Did he?
Yeah, it was a bullet header, back stick, wasn't it?
Didn't celebrate.
Yeah, he went charging
for Derby. Just sprinted back, nobody could catch him. Just everyone sprinting.
What back and off?
Just didn't move his arms, just put his like Terminator.
Everyone was trying to catch him to celebrate, weren't they? They just couldn't, he was just like that. I'm going back to the thing.
Back into his goal.
He always looked very serious, him, Paul.
Yeah. He had probably the best physique I've ever seen in a footballer. I don't know if he was like that at Derby, just defined.
Yeah, he'd always be asking questions about how he could, how you know, it was always about trying to get the best, most out of him as a player, and also his physique as well. He'd be constantly trying to work on it. And
it's mad because you'd think, because he put that much work into his legs and his strength, he couldn't kick it over the halfway line.
He didn't have a good kick, did he? But
he didn't have a throwing it, would he?
If I'm a goalkeeper and I score, I'm going absolutely mental.
Just a shame that's against...
Yeah, it was against his old clubs, wasn't it? So it was like a bit... Oh. He was a hero for Derby and stuff like that, so...
You need to see this goal.
I'm still celebrating, I think.
But you're going to score... I mean, chances are you're not going to score one goal. Well, I'll score one goal, and then you can't give it the old, I'm not celebrating against my old club.
I'm assuming... Well, it must be the last minute.
I'm sure... it was an equaliser, wasn't it?
Must have been.
It must have been, yeah.
I don't think they'd come up if they were getting a point away from home.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to getting into this. Sunday League to Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some journey.
Yeah, incredible journey. I think it was only kind of after you reflect back on your career that you realise, wow, is it, has anyone really taken that journey and elevated themselves from relative obscurity from where I was? Because, you know, at 19 years old, you know, when I became a Premier League footballer, in the April, when I turned 19, I was still working at Summerfield Supermarket in Stamford.
So to
stacking
go
shelves,
stacking shelves. I worked in the dairy department of Summerfield supermarket, dairy assistant. I used to put the milk out, sausages, cheese, yogurts.
And at so, that point, were you, what level are you playing at the same time?
So in the April, I'd had just started like a trial match for Nuneaton Borough. So they were in the Doc Martens Premier Division. And at the same time, I was also playing for Deeping Rangers, which are in the Peterborough and Saturday League as such. And I was playing for my brother's fruit and veg company called Paulie's. So my brother and his mates got a team together in the Peterborough Sunday League, and I just joined them, basically. And so I was effectively in the April, I was playing for three teams, Deeping Rangers, Paulie's, and just starting for Nuneaton Borough.
What's the Doc Martens? Is that conference back then?
It's the one below the conference. Yeah.
Because straight away I think of Vardy, but even Vardy's was a gradual progression, really. Yeah. When it went conference, Fleetwood.
Yeah. Leicester. League One, champ.
But to go from where you were,
yeah,
to be dropped into a Premier League team.
Yeah.
At that point, have you got any, can you even contemplate aspirations of being a Premier League footballer?
Nah. Oh, what? Because we were all like, we were going out on the Saturday night, having a few drinks, and it was just a laugh on a Sunday. Do you know what I mean?
Crap.
But I used to like it because like I was a good team and we used to score goals. So my record for Paulie's is I played 12 matches in the Peterborough Sunday League and scored 31 goals.
So I went
on a run. I was looking because my dad, in my last season when I became a pro, he kept a record of every game I played, the date, who we played against, home or away, and how many goals I scored. I'm looking at that before I came here, funny enough, because I thought, well, I'll not probably produce my Premier League goal scoring record because that's probably not as impressive as I can if I can produce my Sunday League. I went on a run of scoring 16 goals in four games. That's how I got my name like mentioned. And when I was playing for Deeping Rangers, I'd sort of, you know, you kind of feel like you maybe found your level a little bit because you're doing well. Okay, you're not maybe excelling, but I was quite happy at that time, like being in the Deeping Rangers first team. That was my aspiration as a footballer. Of course, you dream of becoming a Premier League footballer. You know, it's every kid's dream. It was my dream from the age of six. But like, would anybody thought that within 6 months that I'd be signed a 3-year contract in the Premier League? And that's just mad. Like, mad. Honestly, when I look back, it's crazy mad how that came about.
Just going back to that. Sorry, Chris. Just going back to that part-time job. Do they put the milk with the longest date at the
back? It depends. Do you
get taught that? Right, whatever's out of date first, put it to the front for people just coming and picking the milk up.
Yeah, you're told it's part of your job. If you're putting stuff out on the shelves, the idea is to take all the stock off the shelf, put the better date stuff at the back, and then replenish the older dates at the front.
Sneaky.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Changing lives again, aren't we?
There'll be no cost listeners getting any milk out that's going out of date in a couple of days. Right.
Serious question, do you always look at the date on milk?
Yeah.
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 And I do at the back.
You use it at the back, yeah. You're knocking other cartons over, aren't you, all the way through?
I'm just fly by, grab it, carry on.
But, and as well, not many people know this, really, that, you know, the metal, the stacking things are in, whatever they're called, you know, where the milk's in.
Yeah.
You know, if you're struggling, there's one right at the back, you think, oh, I can't get that. The metal things on a spring, so you can actually just lift them up, ping, 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 and then get to the back.
Oh, my mind's blown.
See, I tell you what.
So next time you're in a supermarket and you see, what, even if it's got nothing on it, you think, oh, well, that can't be moved. Just ping it up. It's on a bit of a, it's quite therapeutic to do that.
See, you know, when I was asking the question, you were like, what the fuck?
No, you do that. Next time in the supermarket, do that. And you go, oh, I can see that. Now I can get to that good date at the back because I know how to lift
these shelves.
I'm going to
get bankrupt local as to me for taking shelves down.
By the way, it's taken deep in 20 years to replace you as well, because Luke Steele's just signed.
I've heard, yeah.
As a natural goal scorer.
I've heard. Yeah, I listened to Luke's podcast and, you know, I think it's quite funny when you listen back and people that you kind of, you know, maybe from the local area or things like that. And yeah, you're telling me that he's up front for my old team. Deacon Rangers, Deacon Rangers in my heart. Like, I joined Deacon Rangers at under 14, like under 14s, 15s, 16s, 17s, 18s. I played in the B team, the A team, the reserve team, and the first team. Like, Deacon Rangers was like everything. They taught me
where it started.
Like, yeah, everything. So yeah, to see like he's now doing what I did like all them years ago is quite funny, really.
So were there no like sort of
academy teams are out like sniffing at 13, 14 and...
No, not really. The funny story is, my school teacher, a guy called Stuart Gray, bless his heart, he's passed away now, he was a scout. My PE teacher at school, at secondary school, was a football scout.
For who?
He was for Bristol City and he did some scouting for Peterborough United as well. The local team. Right, so, yeah. So you could probably say, I mean, I always think myself when I made it in football, I think, what must Stuart be thinking? Like, he was my PE teacher.
Like, the one that got away.
I don't know. Like, I spent, so he used to, like, in PE, he just used to throw me a ball. He said, right, you organise the matches and we'd play football. That's all we do at PE. And he would just go in, we'd never see him, and he'd just, like, trust us. And, like, I don't know, my dad always used to say, why didn't he, like, recommend you anywhere or anything like that? Yeah, it was just a bit of a, it was a weird one that my school teacher, for 5 years of my life, didn't think that maybe I was capable of making anything of myself. And, you know, my dad used to reward me, so my dad would give me a fiver for every goal I'd score. Like at 18, 19, yes, I was earning money at the supermarket, stuff like that. But a fiver a goal, I was like, that was like, oh, do you know what I mean? I was wanting to score week in, week out.
What about for Paulies? Did they like an apple?
Yeah, no, he did.
An apple a goal?
No, the fiver a goal. So like, do you know what I mean? Like earning like a few hundred quid from my dad just by scoring goals. Because he knew that if I was scoring goals regularly, I'd have the headlines. Do you know what I mean? They'd always have a write-up. And if I did well and score goals, then I'd have the headline. And I always used to remember watching the Premier League fixtures or, you know, when you'd open the newspaper. And I always used to dream, oh, I wonder one day if I could open and have a look at the fixtures. Because that's how you looked at the fixtures, wasn't it? And you see what the attendance was and things like that. You'd look in the newspaper. And I was thinking, wonder if I'd ever have my name one day. Christy there. Oh, wouldn't that be amazing? I used to see it in the, you know, deep in Rangers or whatever. And that was my dream. It was like, oh, one day maybe I could get my name there. So it was just like, it was a total random, like how I got spotted because I played against this, it was a team called I United. And there was a defender that I played against. And like, I must've given him a run around to be honest. I don't know. Cause he knew somebody who knew somebody else that recommended a guy called Bill Berry, who was just a local scout, not for anybody really in particular. He just used to do a bit of freelance. If he spotted a player, he'd like, oh, who do I think I can like put him into? And it just so happened it was Nuneaton Borough that was the team that he ended up sort of spotting me for. Yeah, I come off the pitch and there was this guy speaking to me wanting to like go to Nuneaton Borough. And I hadn't really heard, like Nuneaton Borough for me at the time, you know, I hadn't really heard. I didn't even know where it was in the country. No idea. I remember looking at getting the map book out when I got home. I said, it's not too far away. Do you know what I mean? It's commutable. But for me to go from there, it wasn't like a professional club. It was semi-professional, non-league. You know, to them to go into that environment or to sort of play a match with them, that was like, oh my God. Like, I remember looking them up and it was like, God, they're playing the FA Cup. They're playing the FA Cup.
So it really, you really were that sort of, not starstruck, but you really were like, fuck me, what's happening here?
Yeah, because at Deepen Rangers, there was no crowd. Yeah, there was the families watching you. There was no like, oh, you know, the whole of Deepen came out to watch Deepen Rangers, you know what I mean? So even for me to go to Nuneaton Borough and there'd be a stand or a crowd, like, you know, somebody actually, there's gates to walk, you know what I mean? It was just like, that for me was, oh my God.
People
like,
paying to watch you.
Yeah, it was like... That was like such a massive step for me. But when I look back, that leap gave me everything that I needed to have the footing and the sort of give me the confidence to then go on into professional football. And like, I just remember just thinking, looking around and like walking out, you know, you walked out when there was fans around you. Do you know what I mean? I just remember.
You just get out to the back of a van.
Like, you were used to just walk, you know what I mean? Just
have a piss
like,
at the side of a van. Yeah.
And just like that.
Put your boots on.
And just for me to sort of, to do that and to hear a crowd.
Yeah.
Like I was a big football fan as a kid, but didn't go to many games as a kid. So hadn't really experienced what it felt like to be a football fan. Even though I was a massive football fan. I didn't go to many games. And watch and be experienced of how that sort of the adrenaline of the crowd could feed into a player. So I was experiencing all that like for the first time. It wasn't going to be any, it wasn't like I was going along there and suddenly they were going to sign me. I had to like prove me. I felt like I had to prove myself. So I like played, I played well and I scored goals and things. And then like they're talking about like offering me a fucking contract. you know what I mean? My dad was paying to play at Deeping Rangers. Then all of a sudden, what, they're going to pay me to play football? And I was like, yeah, we're going to sit down with you and you're just going to discuss a contract. And the guy at the supermarket had just had a chat with me about potentially doing a trainee management course.
Oh, decisions.
So I was like, ooh, I've done me 2 years business and I can see this, that could be a route through to me. And I was like, ooh, I don't know. So anyway, we sat down, me and my dad sat down, and Brendan went to a local pub, and I said, I've got a bit of a problem here, Brendan. I said, the supermarket, you know, they're offering me, you know, potential trainee management courses here. So it's all depending on what you're going to offer me here. Things like that. So she showed me, it's £135 a match, £10 goal bonus.
What were you earning at supermarket?
Fucking more.
Yeah.
More. So it was a little bit of a tough decision to do that. But Brendan said, look, Mally, he said, whatever you were going to earn at the supermarket, I'll match it at the end of the month. So go back and tell me what you were earning the last few months at the supermarket. And regardless of this contract, I'll make sure that you earn the same amount.
Just imagine him beforehand. We need him. Tell him we'll match Summerfield. Tell him we'll match Summerfield.
Honestly, fucking out comical when you look back.
What, so the club were going to pay it and he was going to pay it himself?
No, he was going to work it round, whether it was a win bonus that was going to be like inflated or a goal bonus or whatever. We put pen to paper on a like a year contract. It was to end that season. So when I was at the April, and it was for the next season as well.
And what sort of money are the rest of the team earning?
Absolutely no idea.
Similar or?
Don't know. No idea. Wouldn't have a clue.
Well, your dad's still giving you a fiver? At that level?
No. He stopped at that thing.
So really, he made a £15 rise, really, because he was saving his fiver every goal.
Yeah. So, no, the thing, my dad used to do the commuting. So, obviously, my dad was paying the petrol money because it was like an hour and a half ride over to Nuneaton. So it wasn't, the thing is as well, to take that step, it wasn't like it was round the corner.
Yeah.
It was an hour and a half drive, like on a Thursday night, matches and things like that. So it was a bit of a gamble, but when I got there and I just like felt, you know, the smell of the match day and things like that, it was like infectious. Do you know what I mean? It was just like
deep heat.
Yeah. Just everything and stuff like that. Cause even before at Deeping Rangers, like I didn't used to take a shower or anything like that. I was so naive in the men's game, and like I was like, there's men walking around here naked. Like, what do you do? I was like, I'm not getting, like, so you go home with muddy knees and stuff like that. So I'm having a bath at home. Just weird, do you know what I mean? I've never sort of acclimatised myself into men's football, even at that stage at Nuneaton Borough. So I remember thinking, right, what do I do here? Okay, first game, I'm thinking, fuck it. Fucking everything off, get in the shower. I thought, you know what I mean? Just things like that. Straight away, I was like, I need to, you know what I mean?
Climatise.
And myself to sort of what might sort of develop on from there. And I think it was the first 12 games, I'd scored 10 goals, which at that level, you know, a young kid, 19, there wasn't many sort of young kids around, good central location, Nuneaton, the press of Nuneaton, really, they had two local newspapers that used to write the headlines and the reports and things. And it was just like, from that moment on, to the start of that season, that's where the fairy tale began.
Were you actually thinking, do you know what, I can kick on again from here? Because you're obviously so enthusiastic.
Yeah.
I mean, it comes across now that you were so enthusiastic about where you was.
Yeah.
Were you thinking, do you know, if I carry on like this, I'm going to be elite.
Definitely.
Pro footballer.
Because when you say like how enthusiastic and how quickly it went, so rewind back a year when I'm playing for Deeping Rangers, I was a bit disillusioned with football at that time. I couldn't really get into the first team at Deeping. I was in the reserve team and I was earning decent money, as we spoke, decent money at the supermarket. And I loved Manchester United. Like honestly, like from the age of sort of 6 or 7, when my dad bought me my first Man United kit, it was my dream to play for Manchester United. So my bedroom, everything was all about Man U. So when I was getting a bit of disillusioned from football, I remember opening the Stamford Mercury one day towards the back, the classified ads. It was Manchester United Supporters Club, bus leaves from the Danish Invader in Stamford. Anybody would like to be part of the matchday squad, you can join the United club and come and basically the bus took you to Old Trafford every weekend. I remember going to my dad and I went, Dad, I've not been to Old Trafford before and you know how much I love Man U. I think I want to join this. and go to the matches every weekend, be part of this. I'm earning decent money and things, and you know, I'm still living at home. But don't do it. Don't do it, son. Honestly, don't do it. Stick to your football. Honestly, like, I was dad to thank for that, because I was very close to not jacking football in. I would have still played it, but this was only a year ago. So you can imagine, fast forward a year, and my dad's fucking loving it. You know what I mean? I've made the decision for my son not to do that. And
you're just going
to
travel up every home game and watch the game?
Yeah. It was like, what really at that stage of my life, like being a football fan, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to watch football. I wanted to be part of it. I wanted to be part of that feeling about being associated with a club, loving a football club, and being part of that camaraderie of that. I ended up experiencing that as a footballer, not as a fan, which is weird in some respects, because I never experienced that growing up as a child, coming from where I did in Stamford in Lincolnshire, because there was no real big clubs and I didn't watch football. Even though I was a big football fan, it wasn't the adrenaline rush of going to watch matches wasn't there. So sort of fast forward in that a year later, when suddenly Brendan come in, sheet of paper like that. He said, right, sit down, son. Yeah. Do you want me to tell you who's come to watch you today? Arsenal, Tottenham, Leicester, Coventry, Man U. Fucking hell.
You think?
Wow.
Were you glad that he did that then? Or?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did that pick you up? Because that could, I think we've heard from other lads, haven't we? If they knew they were going there, it said they'd be trying too hard or.
Well, probably you've got a flavour of where I've come from a little bit through my earlier childhood life and things. To hear that, oh my God, I was going out there and I was going to score. 100%. I was not going to go out there and not score. It's so inspiring. And he knew that. Brendan knew that with me, that he could tell me that. And, you know, I never sort of was playing a match and looking up to the standard thinking, oh, I wonder if he's a scout. And that. I just, like, I was so focused on football and trying to score.
So after how long is this? And it's obviously got 10 in 12 games.
Yeah.
After how long is he saying the scouts here?
Probably after match 6 or 7 games. It's mad when you think, like, I'd played, like, at the start of a season, I only played, like, 12 games. Do you know what I mean? When you think Nuneaton Borough was such a big part of my story, it was such a short part of my story as well. Mm. I was only there the April and May, did the pre-season. I was there August, September, and I signed for Derby in the October. It's mental. Do you know what I mean? It's just got gone from there. And like, and then I, like agents, football agents appeared. Like me and me, it was me and my dad. It was me and my dad.
We've already established he's a good negotiator.
Yeah. So suddenly, it went from football scouts to then after the matches, football agents. Like people were trying to talk to me dad. And then we had this one guy who introduced himself. His name was David Robinson. Introduced himself. I'm a football scout. I can get you a move into the Football League. And my dad was like, oh, how can you do that? Well, I can. I know this, and this. And anyway, my dad did some research on him. And he was part-time agent, part-time stuntman.
I went on Google.
I like him. Found him. His stunt name was David Glider. And he'd been the stunt man in like Coronation Street. So whenever they'd done any...
it's not Mission Impossible, is it?
No. Whenever they'd done any...
You're on Bradley under Trump.
Honestly, when you look back, you think, God, where I ended up like a few, you know, even 18 months later. So we had this bloke and we ended up meeting him in a McDonald's service station, McDonald's. That's where he was going to talk to us and do his sales pitch as such of how, and he was like, you know, sign with me, so, you know, one of these. So, and me and my dad were like, well, fucking hell, what do we sign with him or not? Like, and we can't just some, you know what I mean? As I've explained, that was like part-time. He weren't like, he'd got like David Beckham, his move to Man U, or it wasn't like one of them, was it?
So
just
it was zipped his hand in.
Yeah. It was like, and he was wanting me to sign, and like, my dad was like, no, fuck, you know, honestly, he stalked us. Me, he got off, obviously in them days, your name was in the like phone book, wasn't it? So like the phone would be ringing constantly. My dad, it's him again. So my mum said it once, he's just going to have to, Bill, you're going to have to answer the phone. You're going to have to answer it. So he spoke to him on the phone. I think he was on the phone to him for like 3 hours. Couldn't not, you know, we were trying to drop a shoulder on this bloke. We couldn't not get rid of him. And then he's turned up at the doorstep, found our address somehow, fucking knock at the door. Like, look, and my dad had to just tell him, so please leave us alone. Like, let us, like, we've got this far pretty much on our own. Yeah. You know, let us kind of make that next step forward. So,
Do you remember the day you found out that there's been an offer for you?
Yeah, I was reading it in the newspapers, but what the club did, they were really clever. Brendan knew somebody at Tottenham Hotspur, so he got me a trial at Tottenham Hotspur. It was just me going along training just so he raised my profile. Clever what he did. So all the press were like, Malcolm Chris is on trial at Tottenham Hotspur. Basically, he just rang his mate at Tottenham and just got me training with a load of youth team players. Right? So I went along there proper. I was out of my fucking depth there a bit. I was staying in hotels in London. I was getting picked up by a guy, a goalkeeper called Alan Marriott. He's a goalkeeper, young Tottenham goalie. He's picking me up from the hotel. And I was like, I've never done anything like this. I've never been away from home. Do you know what I mean? So then they dropped me in a hotel. And I was going in and just training with these young lads at Tottenham. Went there for 3 days, come back, fucking all over the press. Malcolm's on trial at Tottenham Hotspur. Fucking hell. I was like, oh, yes, I'm fucking trying on Tottenham Hotspur here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So again, straight away, that sort of it created a little bit of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's clever, isn't it?
Yeah. A little bit. So again, exactly the same. Knew somebody at Leicester City. But the difference at Leicester was that, like, we're at Tottenham, it was just a bit of a, you know, raise your profile a bit. Leicester were actively looking to sign me. Every
player.
Were
Leicester at the time?
They were Premier League.
Right.
Martin O'Neill was a manager. Remember, Ian Marshall was a centre forward. So it must, it was around that sort of Heskey. So I was training with their first team players and I played in a reserve match at Filbert Street against Sunderland. We won 1-0 and I scored the only goal. And I was like, fuck.
But they couldn't contain you, could you? I mean, you talk about walking out at Nuneaton and you're walking out at Filbert Street.
Yeah. Like, you know, playing in a Premier League stadium and like scoring the winning goal in it as well. And I remember I played really well as well. I thinking, fucking done it. There you go. I remember, I think, oh, you know.
Signing for Leicester tomorrow.
Yeah, that's it. I thought, I've done so well with Nuneaton. I've trained really well. I've played a match. Oh, fucking hell. Wow. I remember feeling so excited after that Leicester City match. Martin O'Neill came into the changing room afterwards. Fucking Martin O'Neill, Premier League manager. Wow. He said, I'd like a word with your son. Fucking pulled me in the back office. Just started straight. He said, well done. He said, thought you played well. He said, we'd like another look at you. I was like, oh, honestly, like, I know I probably at the time should be thinking, you know, I felt like straight away the life drained out of me. I was like, bloody hell, what do you have to do here? Like, like, I know that probably looking back now, like I maybe just maybe a lot got a little bit carried away because I was riding such a crest of a wave and like, of course there was no give me that they were going to sign me.
There on the
do you
table.
Know what I mean? Exactly. So maybe I was just like, maybe got a little bit ahead of myself there. And I was like, I came away from that experience and my dad said, it'll happen for you, son. Honestly, just, it will happen for you. And Derby County ended up ringing me, I think it was a couple of days later, they had a reserve match against Boston United at Boston. I played crap, played shit. I couldn't trap a bag of sand, to be honest. Didn't score, didn't play particularly well. My dad rang me the next day, said, Brendan's been on the phone. Yeah, Derby County want to sign you. You're joking. Yeah, no, they want to sign you. They want to sign you. So this was the day after the reserve game I've played. Me, sleep, a bit of a sleepless night because it was like,
that's a chance. You're thinking that's a chance gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was my chance gone. Luckily, it turned out that they'd sent scouts pretty much the whole of the way through the season there. So it wasn't like they were just judging me on that one match, that one performance. They might have saw something. It happened. And like, I never, ever, ever looked back from that moment to then, you know, going over to Pride Park and signing for Derby the next day.
Get ready for this one. I like this. This is a new one, ladies and gentlemen. Elite Competitions.co.uk.
Good voice.
Like it.
And what we got?
This is unbelievable, by the way. I've had a look on the website. Daily competitions. And it's not like our tombola. These happen for a start. And the prizes that they give away are unbelievable. Like Range Rovers.
Holidays.
$7,000 cash, $30,000 cash. Yeah, take that.
Just a gimme.
Well, you've got to enter. If you win,
what Rolex watches?
Rolex watches, like unbelievable prizes.
Tickets for
Les Mis.
Tickets for marquee sporting events. Yeah. You can win them.
And I think the entry levels is like from 99p,
right,
up to some of them might be 100 quid, but you've got a chance of winning big. I mean, you're rocking up with your arm down on a McLaren. Going picking kids up.
Bucket list job.
They're like, fucking hell, John's doing all right for himself, isn't he? Little do they know he's entered.
I'm unlucky, honestly. I'm unlucky.
Lucky John.
Very unlucky. I mean, I know someone who enters a lot of these sort of things, and I shit you not, he has won 4 cars. I don't know if it's with this company. Somebody who I know has won 4 cars and approximately £120,000.
Bloody hell.
Remarkable.
Sign me up.
You get 25% off. Go to elitecompetitions.co.uk. Enter the code COSH25.
Yeah, we've got.
How does that sound, Chris?
An offer, 25% off your entries. When you just go over to the website, like you said, elitecompetitions.co.uk. Sign up with that code COSH25.
You're not letting me finish.
Oh, way up. There's more.
He can't actually drive. No, I'm only kidding. He can drive, bless you.
Well, the link's in the description.
Elitecompetitions.co.uk.
Link's in the description. Get yourself involved. 25% off them entries. Hey, you want to see me rocking up in a speedboat next week?
Where do you live?
Orange. I'll tell you what, though.
3 hours from a beach.
A bloody big paddling pool.
No, I'm all over this because I like shit like this.
Did they pay money for you?
They paid 55 grand up front, which was dropping the ocean for a Premier League team. I think they'd just sold Christian Daly to Blackburn Rovers, I think, for like 5.75 million, I think, month before. So, you know, I'm sure they had a little bit of
risk. To Nuneaton, I imagine 55 grand is a hell of a lot of money.
A lot of money.
Probably pays for the season, maybe.
Yeah, a huge amount of money for Nuneaton. And there was other things tied in there. So if I made my Premier League debut, another 25 grand. I've played another certain amount of games, another 25 grand. So I think all in all, there was potential there for about 130 grand for Nuneaton, which, as you said, for a non-league club and for somebody that they'd paid, I don't know how many quid they'd paid me up until that point, a few thousand pounds, was a dream come true for them. So for me to then, you know, go over to Pride Park and like go in the offices there, I couldn't believe it. It was all a whirlwind.
Your dad, your agent again?
Well, no, but by that,
not the stunt man.
No, it was an ex-player, and there's a story here, right? So this ex-player, I can't mention names because there was something that happened a few years later that
tell us after
that that I'll talk to you after. So we were using this ex-footballer as a consultant for the deal. So we get to Pride Park, get in the offices, meet Keith Loring, Derby chief executive, and Keith Pickering as well. He was the secretary. So we go in the office, and before we went in there, agent goes, right, if I shut my briefcase and walk out, you follow me. Right, okay. We got an understanding that that's happening. I was like, yeah, of course, absolutely. We'll do that. Me and my dad were like, we were doing the negotiation in the fucking pub, like, a few months ago, weren't we, for the Nuneaton Borough? So he must know what he's doing because he's been an ex-player. Right, that's what we do. Anyway, got in there. So bang, contract gets put down. He looks at it. Right, okay. Yeah, right, okay. Fucking puts it to one side. Fucking briefcase goes down.
Oh no, not first offer. No. Yeah. Oh no.
Briefcase goes down. I look at me dad, I think, fuck, we're leaving here. So up he goes. And off out he goes.
That's the signal.
So me and my dad were like looking at each other. Bear in mind, I'd seen what it said, as in money and length of contract. I'd seen it because he was sat in front of me. And I was like looking, I was thinking, licking my lips going, ooh, right, this is all right. So it was £800 a week and it was 35 grand signing on fee and 35 grand loyalty bonus if I was there at the end of the season.
I can just imagine you still dropping his hand. He's going to shut the briefcase.
I remember looking at the number. I looked at the numbers and I'm like, fucking, where's the pen? I was like, where's the fucking pen? But instead of that, we were out. We'd walked out and me and my dad were like...
So did you get up and walk out then?
Yeah, we walked out. Me and my dad and my agent, it wasn't really my agent. I was like consulting for us. Anyway, and my dad went, what are we doing? He went, it's nowhere near enough. He said, and my dad went, well, what are you looking for then? He went, no idea, but that's... he went, no idea, but more than that. he went, don't worry, they'll be in touch.
So you've actually left the...
We'd left the offices at the time. The chief executive and the secretary, they couldn't fucking believe it.
No like, buys? Did you say buy or anything? Or
not really. Not really. We were out. We were out before we were in. We were out. Honestly, it was. I wish we'd have filmed it. It was like comical. So we got out, and my dad was like, "Well, that didn't kind of feel right." So he said, "They'll be in touch." Well, like I was desperate at the time to be a footballer. Do you know what I mean? If it had said, "I'm probably doing it for free," I'd probably have signed it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If it meant that I was going to be a professional footballer. So
basically, it's worth pretty much 110 grand a year, then, isn't it? You sign on for your bonus, it's 110 grand. So you're on two grand a week, really.
Went from non-eating to a Premier League football club.
135 quid.
And it was a 3-year contract as well. 3-year contract. And we'd walked away from that. And I remember thinking, fuck, this ain't right. And my dad went, and the agent ended up dropping us back off where we'd met him. We met him at a service station just off the M1. We met him, we dropped off, and he drove off. He said, "Don't worry, when they get back in touch, I'll ring you." Anyway, so my dad rang Brendan, the manager, and Brendan already knew what happened because the agent had rang him, and he was like, "Right, stay there. I was like, "Right, okay. I'm coming over." Obviously, it was a Leicester service station. Brendan was from the Leicester area. And Brendan said, "I've rang the club, we're going back." "I'm going back." "Yeah, stay in your car, stay there. So Brendan drove over, we got in his car, we drove to Pride Park, we got in the office. He said, "Let's have a look at that contract." "Yep, you happy with that?" "Yep, happy with that?" "Yep, okay, sign." Boom.
So you signed the original contract that they'd show you first?
Yeah, I'm not going to negotiate. Yeah. Listen, yeah. I played 12 games in the Doc Martens Premier Division. I was playing for my brother's fruit and veg company a few months earlier. That was fine. That was fine.
I know it were fine, but obviously they have gone in as low as they can. You might have been able to get a little bit more.
I wasn't bothered at the time. I wasn't at the time, Parky. It wasn't about the money.
Yeah. It
was for my agent that was there. And now, like I say, I don't know. What was he thinking? What was he thinking? He was thinking, right, Premier League, going into the Premier League striker. What was he thinking? Money was good at the time.
Yeah.
It was decent money at the time. I don't know what he was thinking. Was he thinking 3 or 4 grand? I don't know. I've no idea what he was thinking. He obviously saw it was less than a grand and thought, not interested in that.
Yeah.
So, but for me, fucking hell, it was a lot of money.
So your priorities aren't the contract.
It was about.
Which, by the way, is actually a really good contract. In what year was this?
1998.
So you're on 2 grand a week in 98 at 19, effectively.
Yeah, I mean, they did say, after we signed it, he said, "Look, you know, this is the contract. This is the contract that we offer all the what we see as you is a reserve player." I wasn't taken aback by that. I wasn't expected to go in there as a first team player. And it was also something for me. There was a bit of security there as well. It's 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I wasn't going in there with a year and thinking, "Oh, I hope they don't find me out within a year and I've got nowhere to go." So for me, that was incredible that I was like doing that. And like Brendan did so much for me. He was the one that created everything. He got the contacts in there and he got the deal done as well.
It sounds like the way the agent's gone about it would have gotten their backs up, the club secretary, the chief exec and stuff. You know, the way
that's
he's
why
just
we
went,
had to do it. That's why Brendan knew straight away we had to get back there.
Yeah.
We've got to get back there. You know, we can't leave it because, you know, hang on, he's a bit of an arsehole. Yeah. You know, none of that. I don't know. They must have thought me and my dad were right proper fucking arseholes. Do you know what I mean? The way that we got up, it was, you know, they weren't to know that it was all fucking flat. Yeah.
In unison as the briefcase.
I remember driving away from Pride Park and seeing it in my rear view mirror as we're driving around, singing, "Oh no, what am I doing?
Jeez.
Do you know what I mean? It's like crazy when you think back.
That goes again to agents, a lot of them just been arseholes.
I don't know. You know, even if we'd have stuck with him, you know, I might have gone back the next day and I might have been signing a 5 grand a week. I don't know. But there was no way that when Brendan found out what went on, this is a dream move for everyone concerned. You know, my family, me, Brendan, you know, to have the exposure for him to get a player into the Premier League, you know, for Derby as well. It was a good story as well. Do you know what I mean? It was a good story when I got in and everyone was like, "Oh, do you know what I mean? That's a nice story, isn't it? Like, guy came from a supermarket and this, that and the other." And it was nice, refreshing.
What were your first week as a professional footballer? Because professional footballers are fucking weird bunch.
Yeah.
Well, it must have been like a rabbit headlights thinking, what the fuck are these people here?
Weird, yeah. I mean, I turned up in my dad was still driving me, obviously, at the time. Didn't I? I had a C-Reg Ford Fiesta, which was about 17 years old, manual. my dad had a G-Reg Champagne Gold Ford Sierra Estate. That was an automatic, so it was better to drive. But that was 10 years old as well. That was 10 years old in 98, so...
Champagne Gold.
I'll never forget it. It's like, because I did so many trips. I drove over to Nuneaton and I remember thinking, oh, it's mint because it was quick. Do you know what I mean? I was used to driving my Fiesta and I drove this Sierra and, oh God, this is proper luxury, this. Automatic as well. And we turned up in the training ground in my dad's car. And again, naive, just thinking, and I remember driving in, I think, oh, some nice cars in here, aren't there? Dad, shall I sort of get it? Right, park over here.
Don't put it next to that Mercedes, Dad.
Don't go too far down. Just right, come in, do a left turn now and I'll get out here. So like he used to wait for me at the end of the car because I'd obviously like I was like bring me in the and again like what do you wear as a footballer? Like and I was like
thinking suit.
Track suit. Yeah, that is, footballers wear tracksuits, don't they? Do you know what I mean? I thought, right, so I bought myself an Umbro tracksuit, Umbro wash bag. I had a Nike tracksuit and had a Kappa tracksuit as well. You know the Kappa? Yeah, we had the had a blue, like electric
not
blue one.
They weren't poppers, were they?
No. I had like three tracksuits and I remember turning up and like, oh, fucking no one wears tracksuits. Everyone's like dressed like they're going out to dinner. You know, really smart and like... I was like, why are people dressing like that? Footballers wear tracksuits, don't they? And I just, you know, it was just things like that. Yeah, a little bit of naivety of me. And to be honest, I wore a tracksuit for about the first 2 years that I was there. I went in and I found it really hard to change, like to sort of mold from this young, naive kid who went in there. I was like not used to a real proper football dressing room, the banter and everything like that. And I was like light years behind with all that.
I was going to say, how did you get on with that? Because it's ruthless. The ruthless.
Yeah, like my mum and dad like brought me, you know, to respect everybody, and like I remember like being in the chest changing room, and like someone like had a go. I was like, you can't say that. I was in my head. Like I wasn't out loud. I was like, you can't say that. And I was thinking, oh, it must be feeling. Oh, poor lad. Like you can't. And he said it again. I'm like, oh, well. They're not going to start on me now, are they?
You think you were getting bullied?
I don't know. It was just like, it's banter, isn't it? But like, and I was thinking, oh, I don't want it to be me, because what am I going to say back? I can't have a go at them. So you're like almost going, like I felt myself very quickly, and it was hard. It's hard to sort of talk kind of about that. I kind of found myself getting in a little bit of a shell straight away with that, because I didn't really want people to like, because you go in, and you know what the banter's like in the dressing room, you know, you'd have stuff hung up, you'd have... you know, your socks cut out and stuff like that, or trainers hung up. And I was like, I don't want to be that player. I just want to stay quiet in my corner and stuff. And, oh, if someone's having, sorry, let's have a little bit of a laugh. Oh, that's funny. I was thinking, oh, you know, I want to put my arm around you because you're like, do you know what I mean? So it was like, it was straight away from sort of day one. It was a weird transition. I found that really, really hard. Because I wasn't in a football environment ever growing up as a kid.
I think if you join as a YT or whatever, you sort of learn how it is as your YTs, all with your pals at the same age.
And you're frustrating.
Yeah.
Dairy aisle straight into the dressing
room. Yeah, I'd have been fetching milk cartons in and that and putting them on your pegs and stuff like that.
it was, and like, you know what I mean? But in the same respects, for me to be sitting alongside, I was awestruck as well. You know what I mean? I was like, I remember the first ever training session used to do patterns of play at the baseball ground.
Are you training with the first team straight away?
Straight away. So I was like, boom. It wasn't like trying to find your feet. It was straight away. I remember the first training session I ever did was on a Thursday. We did the patterns of play for the Saturday match. And I got paired up front with Paolo Wanchope. Fucking hell, I'm up front with Wanchope here. Okay, right, yeah. And I never forget it as well. Because by that stage as well, I was kind of fearless as well, a little bit with my football. Like maybe that got kicked out of me a little bit when I got proper professionally trained, because you've got to do this. We got to hold the ball up, haven't you?
Yeah.
Oh no, you can't do that. Oh no, you're not allowed to do that. But I remember the first training session, the ball dropped and I did a Rabona through to put Paolo one shot through, clean one-on-one, did a Rabona. I don't remember, he come over to me and give me a high five. I thought, fucking made it here. I might be up front for Saturday. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, it was strange because like one shot for me, he was like a bit of a derby hero, wasn't he? And he was a little bit hero for me because one shot, was it the season before, 97, he announced himself at Old Trafford, didn't he? I was a big Man U fan, yeah. So to see one chop score that goal at Old Trafford when he dribbled through,
went put through
it
everybody.
Past, yeah, he went through everybody, didn't he? And he right footed it in the corner past Schmeichel in the Stretford end. Do you know what I mean? I was always a little bit envious, and I was like, I'm playing with the man who scored at Old Trafford. Do you know what I mean? It was just like I was proper green at the time. I was just so happy that I was playing and training.
You know, you talk about going into the dressing room and being uneasy with everything.
Yeah.
When it gets to going out on the training pitch, in terms of self-doubt, is there on there? Because to do a Rabona in one of your first training sessions.
No, that was my release. Because yeah. I was probably suffering a little bit off the pitch with that transition more than I probably admitted at the time.
Did you have many conversations with Jim Smith?
No, not really. Not when I saw it. I didn't meet Jim. I met him like on the training pitch. He came in when I played in practice match. He came in the dressing room afterwards. So he was there watching that. But I've never really had a conversation with Jim. He wasn't that sort of manager. I didn't really need that. I think he just let me get on with it a little bit. He kind of developed into more of a father figure for me when I got into the first team as such, but did never feel the need to have conversations with me. When he did, it was just a bollocking, basically.
It was. Cheers, Jim.
I can, you know, count a few times where, you know, he's called me in his office and like straight away, Malcolm, can I have a word? Fucking hell, his heartbeats like that. Because everyone fucking scared of him. I mean, I can clock that straight away at the club. So you'd be training and the training session would be going really, really well. Zippy, you know, passing. Right. And then all of a sudden, people will start fucking falling over the ball or giving it away. I say, fucking, what's going on here? I look around and I think, fucking Jim's coming over. Everyone shit themselves. Honestly, the training standard, everyone like tried too hard because he was like a Cluffy.
Even the experienced lads.
Yeah, I've seen players crumble in training because Jim stood on the sideline. Yeah, honestly, he would fucking crucify you. He would proper crucify you.
Well, how did you feel after your first booking?
That I didn't want another one. And I think that's how he managed that. If you got one, like, no way am I getting another one.
What were you like? Do you know, obviously, really enthusiastic about football. And so, you know, when you're on the long coach trip, are you like asking players questions about football?
You know, no, like, I was the opposite.
What, you were quiet?
Yeah.
Not like, you know, like you could have been tell us about that. Tell us about
No,
you know.
I was very quiet. Very introverted.
It's strange because there's kind of a contradiction there of how you behave within the social environment. But then when you got on the field.
Yeah.
Did you just play without fear? Because I imagine, you know, we talked about the piss taking and everything. If you'd have done that Rabona and cocked it up, I imagine you're getting a load of stick for that as well, but you're disassociating.
I ended up
the two parts.
Like, yeah, I ended up, there was like two sides of me. And like I say, if you speak to anybody who knew me from then, they'd say I'm very introverted, very quiet, didn't really say a lot and things. And I look back and think that wasn't really me. And I just wish if I could change anything about myself in that time was just to be myself.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just to be, do you know what I mean? If I got the piss taken out of me, it doesn't matter.
Not worry how footballers behave, yourself.
And that's hard for me to say because that affected me for a number of years.
That's easier said than done.
It is, absolutely. And I never was myself. And that's how, you know, I never was myself really when I look back.
I think you made a good point though. It sounds like you didn't take that on the pitch with you though.
Yeah.
You kind of...
No, that I say...
Could be yourself.
I think if I had have done that, I just wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made the person that I was and the player that I ended up becoming. But football for me was just that release. I loved when we got on the pitch and you could... Yeah, you'd have a bit of a laugh and a bit. And I just struggled to connect off the pitch because I just didn't feel... I know this, you know, you look back, there's something called, you know, imposter syndrome, really, when you sort of, you're not kind of feel like you belong in. And I think because things happened for me quite quickly and so fast that I never mentally adjusted. Physically, I could. No problem. You asked me to run there. You asked me to do a chronicling and finishing session. Pass the ball. Could do all that. But the mentality of being a footballer and stuff, like, I struggled with. Really did.
Mm. Yeah. Need to speak about your debut.
Yeah.
So were you there three months? Were you just training, playing the reserves, and then got your chance?
I got my chance at Sheffield Wednesday. So I was like around the squad. It was funny as well because I ended up on the bench in the November. So I signed in the October. There was a depletion of the squad due to injury. And I found myself on the bench at Anfield.
In the Premier League?
In the Premier League. I could not bloody believe it. I expected to go in there and maybe a year, 18 months, you know, find my feet, just quite happy being there.
Maybe even loaned out. Being such...
Yeah, exactly. Maybe being loaned out and stuff. But in the November, there was that many injuries. I was on the bench at Anfield. Like, oh my God, wow. And then anyway, a few months later, I ended up making my debut. And I just remember thinking, like, I've done it. I've done it. I've played in the Premier League. I'd never... Do you know what I mean? I was like, so as a kid, that's really what was my dream to do. And like, I came off the bench at Hillsborough against Sheffield Wednesday, and just I was so happy, like to play in the Premier League when I was such a big football fan. I'd seen nearly every goal and every game of the Premier League that ever existed. Do you know what I mean? Watched it all the way through, and for me just to know that I'd played in the Premier League was like incredible. Pavel Cernicek got sent off, so I was running through, got played through, knocked the ball past Cernicek. He came like Kung Fu karate kicked me, got sent off. So I was like, you know what I mean? It was like, I didn't score, but I'd sort of felt like, you know, you could watch Match of the Day back and like, I was there. Like,
that's me, they're getting signed. Me, you know what I mean?
So, and then it went through a little bit of a in and out and stuff like that. And I just bided my time. And then obviously I made my name. My full debut was against Middlesbrough at the Riverside for Derby when we were struggling really at the time. We went there and we won 4-1, and I scored two goals on my full debut in the Prem. So it was everything that, you know, I'd worked at, you know, from being sort of 6 years of age, the dream to do that, to play. I mean, I never forget, my mum and dad were in the crowd. And I was so pleased for my mum and dad, you know what I mean? That I could, you know, celebrate with them. My second goal that I scored, you know, it was in front of the Middlesbrough the Derby fans. I saw my mum and dad when I just like, I can't imagine, you know, being a dad myself, you know what I mean? The emotion that they must have been feeling.
And knowing
the journey that I'd been through to get to that stage to do that and look down on their son. It's, I don't know, it's just weird, isn't it? And you're thinking, oh, wow, what a feeling that is. Dropped to my knees. I remember doing a bit of a knee slide. You know, and the reason why I did a knee slide is it took me back to about a year before we went on a trip to the Belfry. What's that? There's like a nightclub at the Belfry.
Oh, I know what you mean.
I was hoping you were going to know it. I can't think of it. But there's a nightclub at the Belfry. So we went there for like a golfing trip with a club, Jim Smith and that went. I'll never forget, we all had a few drinks and pissed and stuff on the dance floor. And like, I ended up doing a knee slide, whatever, stupid knee slide across the dance floor. And I remember finishing my knee slide, looking up, and fucking Jim Smith looking down at me, fucking shaking his head. I didn't know he was there. I didn't know. It was busy, packed nightclub. And I remember some of the lads going, oh, fucking knee slide. So I just knee slid. Like I said, I just looked up. Oh, fuck.
Did he just shake his head?
Yeah, he just like looked down, fucking beer glass, just like shook his head. And I was like, and then when I scored the first goal, it was quite funny because I ended up doing a knee slide. And that just sort of, yeah, reminded me of that time when I did it in front of Jim.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Were there any of the players in that dressing room in them early days that took you under their wing?
No, I was just like, not really. I was like relative.
The lads in the dressing room would have thought, he's a bit of a weirdo.
Probably, yeah. Like, oh, he's a bit quiet, or he's a bit like, oh, where did he, you know what I mean? I come from nowhere. It wasn't like I had a reputation and things. And you know what it's like if you sign in there as a, you know, I didn't really sign into Middlesbrough as like a marquee big sign-in. And I never felt, I should have done, which we'll probably talk about later. But, you know, there was no expectation of me. So I don't think that I wasn't, as you said there, you know, should I have been the one to go, right, just tell me about, you know, pull one of the experienced players to one side. I was just sort of sitting back and just watching it. I was very observant. Yeah, absorbing stuff in and things like that. And, you know, just trying to think how do people act? And, you know, I remember the first, so I signed in that October and the Christmas party, the first Christmas party that came in that December was to Dublin. And it was organised, like Daryl Powell had organised it, Igor Stimak had organised it, and they wanted all the young kids to come. And they were the first team players were going to pay for the young kids to come. Well, that's nice. Anyway, so, all right, okay. Oh, we're flying over there. I'd never been in an aeroplane. I'd never, at the age of, what was it, 9, I'd never flown in an aeroplane before. So I remember turning up East Midlands Airport, and there was one of these propeller planes. Fucking hell, oh my God. The first flight, it was like this like thing that was bouncing up and down. But I mean, it's a bit of a blur, that trip. But one thing I can remember, like Igor Stimak downing shots of whiskey and smoking. I remember being so disappointed. How can a footballer smoke? I remember, Stefan Snore as well was in a, and he was smoking as well. And I just remember thinking, really disappointed that these players that I sort of held in such high esteem.
Still looking at it from a fan's perspective, in a way.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I would say so. I was thinking, you can't smoke. Do you know what I mean? And yeah, it was just a bit of a, but again, it was that whole experience, wasn't it? Okay, just seeing footballers outside of a club environment and like enjoying themselves and letting their hair down and, oh, how do you act when you're a bar? Do you, you know, what do you do? You know, so it was all like, I was trying to wing it a little bit, to be perfectly honest with you, and just trying to get through it the best way that I could. Weird.
How long did the Sea Reg Escort Fiesta last?
Not long. So
did you think, fuck it, I'm going to have a bit of a blowout?
Well, the 35 grand dropped into my account. And then what was the first thing, obviously, that I needed was a car. So
a couple of tracksuits.
I was like, yeah, tracksuits are sorted. I was living at home, so I didn't really want for anything. Again, we were like, right, what do we, I can't go too extravagant, obviously, although I would have liked to, but I couldn't anyway, because it was like, it's not much really. I could have, yeah, you could have bought something nice, but it would have washed it all away. So me and my dad, we drove over to Motor Point in Derby. So I went round, I saw a Ford Puma, manual, grey.
Manual,
grey, Ford Puma. I think it was a 1.2 litre, 10 grand, Irish import. That was my first car that I bought myself. And I loved it. I thought I was king dick.
Those bollocks.
Yeah. Do you know the first place where I went when I bought it? I went to Pride Park and I bought myself a Derby County car sticker and I stuck it in the back window.
Did you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was so proud that I was a footballer.
Oh, right.
I bet the fans love you when you pull it up.
But then I turned up in the car park. And I thinking, why has no one else got a car sticker in the fucking thick window? Why is it just me? That's it. Honestly,
the rest of the lads, that's the last thing that you want in your car.
Yeah, I know, but I look back there and I'm like, oh my God.
You'd rather have two furry days.
What was I thinking? Do you know what I mean? But
how long did
I was
it last?
So... Not long. Yeah. Not long. No, it was like, I need to get this off. You know, it was one of them ones where you couldn't get the fucker off. It wasn't an easy peeler. So it was like, oh, but it was things...
I just told you a new arsehole.
Yeah, I know. But I think they realised it was a bit green, so they kind of left me alone a little bit. But yeah, honestly, things like that were just...
Imagine being in the club shop. I'm sure our new centre forward has just been in for a Derby County sticker.
No.
Might not be. It must look like him. But
no, well, they didn't recognise me. They didn't recognise me in the club shop. So I'd gone in there with my mum, right? Because my mum and dad and me had been to buy the car from Motor Point. So then we went into the Derby County club shop. When I signed, they said all players get 20% off purchases, right? So obviously I said to my mum, I went, Mum, I don't think they're going to recognise me here. So I don't really want to go and embarrass myself by going to the till and asking for 20% off. Would you do it for me, Mum? So she went, right, okay.
So you're still wanting
the 20% off.
40 pence off this £2 sticker.
No, but my mum and dad had baskets of stuff. My mum and dad bought everything, literally. They were so proud. know what I mean? For mum and dad, where I come from, not to suddenly they could go in a, like Nuneaton Borough had a shed. Like deep in Rangers, you couldn't buy any memory. Like suddenly I was a player, and this is where my story's quite like, I don't know, it's like quite good in some respects that, that we were so green in all of that, that my mum and dad would go, you could buy the polo shirts with Derby County on it. Like I bought myself a replica shirt as well, not at that visit. I bought myself, I wanted to feel like, like, I don't know, I wore a Man United shirt all my life, right? So if I was going to suddenly be a player at another club, I had to have the shirt. I had to wear the shirt and look down in it and feel like I was part of that, that team that I was watching on the telly, that I was still as a young, as a relative young person in football. I bought the shirt and I wore it home.
You wear it at home?
At home, yeah.
Yeah.
No nights out?
No nights out, no. No, I wore it underneath. No, but that's the thing. That's, and that's how, like, I just want people to understand, because obviously I've got my autobiography coming out. I just want people to understand, like, all the stuff that, that that was in and around that at that time. Do you know what I mean? Falling, I fell in love with my football club. Yeah. I disassociated myself with Manchester United in some respects, and I needed to fall in love, not just being a footballer, but falling in love with the football team, because I was such a massive football fan. You don't, you, I know it's easy for me to say that. I know that every footballer is, but honestly, I was, and I so desperately wanted to fall in love with my team.
It's the example, the example of the polar opposites of coming through the football academy and coming in as a fan. I think is,
yeah, exactly. And to, for me to go in that club shop and to see, you could buy, I mean, my mum bought like the you know, Rami, you know, she bought a Rami to take home and stuff. And my mum and dad bought the, you know, this was the first season when I was on the team, you know, the team club picture. You could buy that at a club shop. My mum and dad had that as their main picture above the fireplace. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, it was incredible.
I just imagine your mum and the full manager court down to anchor.
I just think it's sad because I was like that at the start, and then it soon just turned into a job. You know, we speak about it quite a lot where it's like, we're not really into football that much.
I bet you wore fucking your Sunderland shirt out.
Well, I was a Sunderland fan, wasn't I? So I was like that. But when you were saying it, I was thinking that, I was a little bit like that, and then it just like that.
It does. It goes.
Went with a click of a finger.
Yeah. For his like, you know, I think it always stayed for my parents. You know, seeing their son, you know, go in the club shop and I'm modelling the kits, or you know, I was a poster or a card or whatever. It never kind of left my mum and dad. For me, obviously, yeah, you merge away from that. But then that's where I think, in some respects, I lost a little bit of the identity of what made me, and you just sort of morph into that person that you're expected to be, that people look at you and want you to be. You know, I look back and we laugh at the way that I was when we do that, but that was me. Yeah. That was what I was and where I was at that point in my life.
So at that point, you were being yourself.
Yeah, possibly.
And which a lot of the old football teammates would be like, what a fucking little nerdy twat this
is. Busy bastard.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's when you start changing.
Yeah, you're seeing, I don't know, it's just like, it's strange, isn't it? You just sort of morph to be somebody that people expect you to be. I think that's all I can say. And, you know, and along with that becomes, you come fame as well. Do you know what I mean? And I'm from a small sleepy town in Stamford. You know what I mean? That's a really difficult one because, like, in certain situations, you want to be recognised when you're famous.
When you tell Nick a bird.
When you're on a night out, and you know, you're in a situation or whatever. Yeah, there's certain situations that you want a bit recognised, but no one, again, that book of how to be a footballer, how to deal with fame and things like that. The first time that it happened to me, I was in a shopping centre in Derby. So I was in my tracksuit, just
club tracksuit.
No, my training tracksuit. So it was Umbro tracksuit. And these lads recognise me. You know, when someone clocks you, you know, you get that little bit of a, oh, fuck, you know, or you kind of subconsciously know that someone recognises you. So I was in a shopping centre in Derby and they were following us around. I'm like, what do I do here? What am I supposed to do? Am I supposed to turn around? Am I supposed to say hello? And I turned a corner. I was like, I need to drop my shoulder here, get away from them. And I went into Specsavers. Right, so I dropped my shoulder, went into Specsavers.
That new striker we got, he's got a good corner. Right.
And I started looking at these sunglasses, and I started trying these sunglasses on. And then, because these lads were hanging about outside, the security guard came and like sort of looked at these lads who were outside the thing, and they were looking in at me. And obviously, as I put my sunglasses on, I'm looking out at them, Like thinking, are they still there? Obviously, security guard thinks, because they're all in tracksuits, they think I'm with these lads. So straight away, the security guard comes in and starts like, again, when you can clock a security guard's fucking got his eyes on you. So he was ended up like clocking me. So I was in that awkward situation of thinking, right, what do I do here? Do I leave the shop and he's going to follow me out? And then is he going to sort of pull me over thinking that I'm in there? So I sort of panicked and he walked over towards me and I went, them lads are following us. and he went, what do you mean? I said, they're following us. Because I thought he was going to like fucking grab us. So I sort of had to explain to him and he was like, oh, right, okay, I see, no problem. And I sort of like apologised why. I said, I shouldn't be in this shop, but hopefully you can understand.
You've got every right to look at sunglasses if you want to.
I didn't want to. There was no reason for me to be in that shop.
I'd draw my shoulder
in the nearest shop. Honestly, I'd sort of panicked. And that's the dealing with, like, I didn't really know, you know, obviously you look back, you think you should say, hi lads, how you doing? Yeah, right. Oh yeah. No, oh yeah. Can we get your autograph or whatever? I didn't know how to deal with it. Like, it was strange. And like I say, to be then sort of being in a situation where you're sort of a security guard thinks you're in there nicking something with a group of lads in a tracksuit. Like, fucking hell.
Them tracksuits. They always dad in a tracksuit.
Like, oh God. But yeah, it's like that. Well, that's like a funny story of sort of, you know, things that come along and you're trying to adapt as best you can to sort of the newly found fame, I suppose, that I was sort of adapting to.
By the way, and I think I already know the answer to this from just how you've been, but somebody said, did you roll up a £50 note and burn it when you signed for Derby?
What do you think?
I've just answered it.
Absolutely not in a million years. I mean, as well, when I went...
What, a 20?
No, I had a situation once when I went, because when I went, used to go back up my hometown, you know, where I was born and raised, I'd had nights out there, 16, 17, 18, you know, nightclubs, getting pissed, whatever. Suddenly, when I was a footballer, like people, I felt like people were, yeah, there was some parts of the lads that used to know you that, oh my God, wow, you, congratulations.
Please for you.
But there was the other side of it where like people like wanted aggro.
Yeah.
Like for what? Like, and they even used to give it the big end or anything like that. I remember being in Key Old Kate's in a nightclub in Stamford and these two lads came up to me really aggressively. What's this about you burning £20 notes? Like, what are you on about? Like, as if I would ever do that. Do you know what I mean? And the thing, I don't know where these stories come from. Like, I have never in a million years ever done, and would never, ever do anything like
See,
that.
See, to them two, though, I think I'd have gone, they were 50s. Just in that
one. Just to piss them off. Do you know what I did? I ended up, I said, come on, lads. I said, come to the bar. I ended up buying them a drink. And just had a chat with them. And they went, do you know what? You're a decent lad, aren't you? You know, I had, you know, there's been occasions as well, like being a Derby player where, you know, Nottingham. I don't know if anyone's been out for a night out in Nottingham. Yeah, good night out. Yeah, well, I had two nights out in Nottingham and lasted the grand total of about 45 minutes.
Just because you were a Derby player?
Yeah, I ended up the first bar that... So me and my mate went out and I kind of maybe knew that it probably wasn't a great idea for a Derby County centre forward in the Premier League to go out in Nottingham, but I'd always heard that Nottingham's a really, really good night out. And obviously I was at the time liked a night out. And me and my mate said, right, let's go. So we concocted this story that if anyone spoke to us, that me mate was a Nottingham Forest player. Yeah. So he was like the security, like, and he was a Nottingham Forest player and I was his mate. So that would get us out of any trouble that we were going to get involved in, because then they did speak to him because he played for Nottingham Forest. It was a load of bullshit, but we thought we'd come up with that idea. Anyway, the first bar we went into, I got a bit uneasy. I stood at the bar. This lad came over to me and it was quite loud noise. And he went, what the fuck are you doing here? I was like, oh, fuck. And I was just about to say, I'm here with my mate from Forest. Right. And I saw his right hand. He cocked his right hand. Right. And it fucking, and I like did a mate like, like it was almost in slow motion.
Matrix.
Ducked out the way, missed me. I felt the wind of his fist come past me. And this couple were behind me, grabbed me by the shoulder, pulled me back. There was a fire exit here. It was all kind of almost orchestrated, like it was all meant to happen. Like, so he threw a punch at me, missed, got dragged back. The handle of the fire exit was pushed. I was pushed out. My mate followed me and we fucking legged it. Fucking legged it.
First drink in.
First bar, first drink in.
Straight in car, straight on.
Well, yeah, we got a taxi and we ended up going back to Derby. and this was maybe half an hour. So that was half an hour. Then the other
I can't even try it again.
The other 15 minutes, right? So Lee Morris, who lad played for Derby, Sheffield United, a guy called Adam Murray. I think he's still around the scene now. They decided it was the three of us. So we said, "Oh, we'll go to Nottingham for a night." I went, "Lads, fucking not a good idea." This. What do you mean? I said, "Well, the last time I a night out there, I lasted half an hour. First, pretty much the first bar we went in, I got, oh, fucking hell, there's no chance of that happening again." I was like, "Well, bear in mind that obviously it has happened." Anyway, so
let's just
pull at this bar. I think it was like a Wetherspoons or something, and we ended up pulling up in the pub. Got in, we sat in this booth, and I'm fucking there having a drink like this. I fucking look up. It's only the fucking lad that's thrown a fucking punch at me. The same lad. The fucking same lad has walked in the bar. I mean, you couldn't fucking write it. It was the first bar we ended up as well. And I fucking ducked down. I went, and Lee went, "What are you doing?" I said, "You know, when I tell you about that fucking bar, he's just fucking walked in there." He's like, "You're joking." Anyway, we fucking hell. So obviously we didn't want, he was biggish lad. Do you know what I mean? So me, Lee and Adam just got out the bar straight away. And we just said, "Look, we need to go home. Not a good idea." So
I told you.
So two nights out in Nottingham, lasting a total of 45 minutes. Can't believe it, honestly. And I've never been out in Nottingham since. And I maybe don't intend to, because obviously Forest fans probably don't like me even to this day.
You need to speak about some of the players in that team, man. Pinkladze, Ravanelli, Carboni, West.
Yeah, mad.
Taribo, West, yeah. Man.
When you think of, God, you know, again, being that football fan, recognisable figures, world football, dreadlocks, you know, World Cup and stuff like that. And he ended up in our dressing room. I don't know how. Like, he ended up, what is it, Inter Milan, AC Milan, Derby County? Like,
it's not your natural progression, is it?
Totally random. I remember him turning up. He turned up with a load of guys, you know, around which I tended to find, like, the guys that came over from Italy. I seemed to have a lot of entourage. Same with Ravanelli. Ravanelli seemed to travel with quite a few people, agents and whatnot, interpreters. But Taribo was a strange one, because he'd turn up with, you know, I turned up in my Umbro wash bag. He turned up with his Tesco carrier bag. He used to turn up in a carrier bag with his belongings in. I was thinking, fucking hell, you must have earned some serious money in the last couple of years. You're like one of the most famous, recognisable figures in world football. He would turn up with a plastic bag with his stuff in. And his dress sense, oh my God. Obviously, I've criticised my own dress sense, but he would turn up in a tracksuit with shoes. Like patent leather shoes on. He didn't give a fuck. So you know where, you know, they were going, "Oh my God, Taribo, what are you doing?" And he would just turn it, yeah, whatever. Put his bags down, get changed, out he went. I mean, I remember one time at Fulham, so League Cup game, we were in the Prem, Fulham were in the Championship. We turned up there, he didn't turn up. So what would happen is, Taribo very rarely trained. So he played the match, and he was a pastor at a local like church back in Italy. So he used to play his match and go home and preach on a Sunday. Would we see him Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday? Don't know. Might turn up Thursday, might turn up Friday. We hadn't seen him. So we play this night game at Craven Cottage with Taribo. No one knows where he is. No one can get hold of him. Jim Smith's around there. Fucking, where is he? Fucking get on the phone. Nope. So, obviously, he's in the team because he's one of our bigger players. He's, well, where is he? Well, no one knows where he is. So they ended up, he turned up like with a minute to go before team submission. No one had seen him for the few days prior. And I don't know how on earth he ended up turning up. He turned up, and what did he turn up in? He turned up with his fucking Derby County tracksuit on again and fucking shoes. Walking in again with his fucking bag. Like, not caring in the world. Fucking Jim says, "What the fuck?" You know what I mean? But, and then it goes there. So then we ended up doing the you know, like, before you go out, you have the huddle. So Taribo's like, "I want a huddle." Obviously, he'd just come back from Italy where he'd done all his preaching. He was going to preach to us. So again, I've got nothing, you know, nothing against the church, anything like that. So there we were, Jim Smith in this huddle as well. Remember how old school Jim Smith is, mind? Yeah. And you know, so there we all are in the huddle. Taribo is in the middle, preaching to us in a language that I don't know what it is. Is it Italian? Is it his native language? But it's almost like a bit of a witch doctor kind of approach. Like, and you know, and I looked over and Rory Delap was looking at Seth and he was fucking gone. I'm like, oh fucking hell. And then I'm looking at Jim and Jim's like proper shutting his eyes like he's fucking praying. Do you know what I mean? I'm thinking like, oh my fucking God, looking round here. And yeah, he was preaching to us and things like that. And we went out and obviously he was wanting us to win the game.
Did you win the game?
No, we fucking lost 3-2.
That's not how fucking work, is
it? When he, in all fairness, I'll give it to Taribo. Whenever he played, do you know what I mean? He gave his all, you know, the fans will remember him. You know what I mean? He didn't like play. He wasn't awful or anything like that. He always played, he gave his all. But we just, you know, I kind of remember him for just being, he was there, but wasn't there as well. Yeah. You know, and that was kind of the flip opposite with like another big person like Ravanelli, who was there all the time and was like one of the most professional people that I'd ever been around, which surprised me because I'd heard a lot about Rav when he was at Borough. And, you know, the season that he'd had there. And I'd heard a lot about things. And obviously seeing it from a close in, being that football fan in me as well. This is Ravanelli who scored like Champions League final when I was working in the supermarket. And this is, he scored 30 odd goals for Borough. Do you know what I mean? It's like a dream. And then I was ended up playing centre forward with him as well. So it was just like.
How was he with you? Because we've heard he was hard work as a lad to get on with.
No, I enjoyed every moment with him, to be fair.
And as that partnership, would he give you advice, help you?
Yeah, first day of training, came over to me. He didn't speak great English, but he brought Stefano Aranio, who was a fantastic player as well. He came over with Rav to me on the training pitch and Aranio said, Ravanelli is here for you, to help you. I was like, fucking hell, hairs on the back of my neck stood out. Do you know what I mean? It was like, oh my God. He said, yes, Malcolm, I'm here for you.
That must have been like,
yeah, special, yeah. So, yeah, you could argue we played in a struggling team together. Do you know what I mean? We didn't really have the creative, yeah, we mentioned Kincladze there, who set up most of my goals in all fairness, but we didn't really have from wide areas or Kincladze was in and out the team. He wasn't really trusted to have it. It was almost like if we were putting Kincladze in the team, we were going to get overrun in midfield because he didn't do the hard yards back. But I really, really enjoyed it. And for me, playing with Ravanelli and seeing how he looked after his body, what he ate, never missed a training session. He was worked so hard on the training pitch, off in matches. Like it gave me that understanding of right, okay, that's what a top player. That's how he carries himself, and that's the level. And I think why me and him didn't share that partnership was Ravanelli. And this isn't a bad thing about it, he was very selfish in terms of. If he was in and around the goal, he'd be shooting. He wouldn't be looking for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not a bad thing. He'd got to where he got to and he scored all them amount of goals. So for me to forge a partnership, I was kind of that sort of play where I got on the end of things. I didn't create a lot for myself, but I was reliant on a bit of movement around me. Yeah, somebody slipping me in like Kincladze would do. But Ravanelli wasn't that type of player. So we didn't forge that probably partnership where he would make runs for himself where I'm thinking, well, why is he running that? Why is he not coming to me so I can spin off him and things? And it wasn't in our stages of a career where I was going to sell him, well, Rav, hang on a minute, you need to come here, mate. Do you know what I mean? I was kind of in awe of him thinking, well, if he's moving there, then I'll kind of, everything was dovetailed. What he was doing, I was reacting off the back of. Rather than the other way around, which meant we didn't really forge the partnership, which maybe the Derby fans would have liked.
Yeah. And you know, at this point, leading goal scorer with Ravanelli that season, have you been rewarded with a new contract in line with these big names that are coming in?
Yes and no. So yes, I was rewarded, but I probably signed the contract I signed at Derby was the same contract I left at Derby. So when I got in the team, it was only natural where I had got like 18 months left on this contract. So, you know, the club were probably thinking, oh, right, he's in the first team now. Like played a couple of games, made me debut. And they offered me this contract. And maybe in hindsight, I should have just maybe...
Shut the briefcase.
the briefcase. But
I'm off, Jim.
But funnily enough, I've obviously talked ill of the agent. I didn't think he possibly did the right thing when he shut that briefcase. He was still my agent at that point, believe it or not. I'd ended up signing with him after that. I don't know why. I think I'd still sign with him from that original time that he didn't do the deal for me. So he went in with Jim and negotiated my contract and came out, and the numbers were a lot more than what I was on previous. I wasn't part of the negotiation, which I was a little bit uncomfortable about, bear in mind what had gone on
previous
18 yeah. months ago with this agent and whatnot. So he comes out and he says, right, we've sorted it. Bear in mind at this time as well, the agent had said he didn't want my dad being part of the negotiation. I'm the agent, I'm Malcolm's agent, I'm doing the contract. Came out of the office, right, there's the numbers. Okay, so I'm looking down, $3,000. 3.5, 4. 3 years. Okay. Right. But I've written into that contract £100,000 worth of agent fees. Okay.
I thought you were going to say £100,000 for gear from Club Shop.
Merchandise.
£100,000 rallies. Okay. So, okay. Is that, again, is that not, do agents, is that normal? Okay, fair enough. Anyway, so I've still got the same signing on fee. So the 35 and 35 still there. That's still the caveat, but the basic's gone up. Okay, there's some appearance money in there. So there was, you know, it was an improvement, but obviously when I reflect back, I was thinking, you know, Ravinelli was on $40,000 a week.
We're playing in the same team.
Scoring the same amount of teams.
I would say when I reflect back, I was probably the lowest paid centre forward in the Premier League at that particular time. You know, you're thinking 2000, 2001. You know, everyone was earning decent money at the time. Maybe I rushed in a little bit too much and signed that contract. So, but I was a bit uneasy with this £100,000. And I needed to, but if you paid cash, it was 60.
You personally?
Yeah, to pay the agent. So it was £100,000, but if you paid cash, it was 60. Right, okay. A bit uncomfortable about that.
Where'd you get £60,000 cash from?
Well, by that time, we were going to be dipping into loyalty bonuses and the signing on fees.
But to actually get cash,
yeah.
To go the £60,000 cash
there. No, wanted to pay in instalments.
Right.
So it wasn't 60 up front. So it needed to be paid in X amount of instalments over X amount of time, over the length of the contract. So again, right, paying £100,000 or 60. It doesn't take a rocket science to work out probably which avenue you're going to go. Again, uncomfortable about what we're doing. Me and my dad were like, this doesn't feel right. So it was arranged to meet him in a pub car park with me £5,000, first instalment, cash, in a brown paper envelope. There you go. Boom, first instalment. Again, fucking didn't feel quite right. Anyway, cut a long story short, what had happened is my agent at the time had negotiated his agent fees through me, but had also, through the meetings with Jim Smith, had arranged his own fee with the club. Illegal. Cannot do that. You can take from one, but not the other. So you can, as an agent, you can either take your fee from the club or take the fee from the player.
He's doubling up.
Okay. We find that out through lengthy legal process. It turned out better for me. I ended up signing for a company called SFX, which at the time were the best sports agency. I had David Beckham, Michael Owen, Steven Gerrard, all the top players. I got in with them and they went through the due diligence legal process with that particular guy and went away. So I ended up not being out of pocket at all and signed with the best agency in the country.
So you got your money back?
Yeah, got my money back.
Thing is, well, you saying that you were probably the lowest paid striker in the Premier League, your dad probably could have got in and got the same amount of money.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
anybody could
exactly.
have done that.
And I look back and I reflect back on that again. I maybe should have learnt my lesson. Do you know what I mean? Through that naivety. But by that stage, I had signed a contract with this agent. So I was like, felt like I was maybe
obliged.
Stuck with him a little bit. Yeah. You know what I mean? I like think, right, okay, trust with him. But for me not being part of any negotiation and me sitting outside Jim Smith's office while they were in there talking about my contract and one thing or another and agency fees and coming out and having a handwritten piece of paper, Malcolm Christie will pay X £100,000 written in biro. You know, he could have wrote anything, couldn't he? Could have wrote 200, 300.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And there's me signing it. Yeah, okay. Well, if that's what agents do on these upgraded contracts. That's what I must do.
That's your
there wasn't
any
help.
Again,
there wasn't really, like, do you know what I mean, PFA or anything like that. Or, you know, even Jim probably, at the time, obviously Jim's not here to answer that side of things, obviously. But, you know, to say, you know, were the club doing the best? I don't know. It just, it didn't, nothing about that situation from even the first contract I signed, from that one, I suppose it left a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth about that side of football, to know that that predominantly people are out for themselves and not looking to look after the best interests of the players at heart. And obviously I was signed that contract as well. So when we got relegated, it was, as most players had, you know, it was 25% cut for relegation as well. Mm. So, you know, I kind of left, you know, financially the Derby County side of things nowhere near rewarded for what I would say the efforts and things compared to players around me at the time who were on obscene amounts of money. Mm.
But your old man could have got a new Champagne Sierra, couldn't he? Had a job.
Absolutely.
Just took us a
absolutely. And again, you know, and I think back, you know, and I've learnt some harsh lessons, you know, in my story. And I hope, you know, if people are listening to this, that I know it's funny and things like that when you reflect back, but do you know what I mean? It's like, I just wish that in some respects that, you know, there were people out there who would have sort of helped me in that respect, because the one person that helped me through everything was my dad. And then when I became a footballer, then all of these people circle around you like fucking vultures, yeah. You know, agents, financial advisors, all these people, do you know what I mean? And but the one person who had the best interest was my dad. And like, I probably regret when I look back and think that, look, Dad, these people know best because they look after him. But yeah, I suppose looking back on things, I maybe should have took stock and gone, right, before I sign this, let me just check this out. Obviously, I'm glad that I didn't, because it could have been that for 3 years, I was just, you know, meeting up with him in car parks and, you know, I eventually got his license rebuked by the PFA when they sort of, FA, when they found out about it. So, you know, he did get his fingers burnt by it, but it left a massive sort of sour taste in my mouth about that side of football.
It's followed on from last series where Bradley Orr just unearthing the shit that goes on in football. People just getting shit on left, right, and centre.
Because that the same character trait of you going to the club shop and wanting to sticker in your car and embracing the moment of being a footballer is the same character trait that's going to be like, all right, this is what I do, is it?
Yeah.
And that's
asking questions. This is what happens.
You're exactly right. And that was it. It was like, by that stage, I knew no different. I'd not signed an upgraded contract at a club. I didn't know. I thought that's what happened.